Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini of the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn in the Office of Mission, Ministry, and Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back again with you today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times, motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as how to utilize the information we provide today, take full accountability for the decisions you make, and a resulting outcome. Now, one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work life. This is a very special period in our workplace and America. September 15 through October 15, designated as National Hispanic Heritage Month. And as such, we are honored today to have with us a very, very special guest. His name is Eduardo Bursino. Eduardo is a global keynote speaker, facilitator, and program provider who supports organizations in developing cultures of learning and high performance. Earlier in his career, he was the co-founder and chief executive officer of Mindset Works, the first company to offer growth mindset development services. He's also an author. He's written a timely and enlightening book entitled The Performance Paradox: Turning the Power of Mindset into Action. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Eduardo.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be here.
The honor is all ours. Kindly share with the listeners and me from what city and state you are speaking today.
This morning I am at home, which is in San Jose, California.
You have just made this host and many, many listeners very jealous. One of the most beautiful places in the world, that's for sure. Eduardo, sorry to say we've only got 30 minutes. We could spend hours talking about you, your incredible life, this wonderful book that you've written. We're going to jump right into the deep end of the pool. I'm sure our listeners want to know as well as I. You've written this great book entitled The Performance Paradox. What indeed is the performance paradox?
The performance paradox is the counterintuitive reality that if we focus only on performing, our performance suffers. And that is what most of us are doing most of the time. We are trying to get things done as best as we know how, trying to minimize mistakes. That's what I call performance. And just counterintuitively, it hurts our performance. So if you we have this sense as we go about life that the way we get good at something is by doing that thing a lot. So if somebody becomes great at, playing tennis or playing basketball, like the way to get great at playing basketball is by playing a 10,000 hours of basketball, and then you'll become a great basketball player. And when you look at the research, when you look at great coaches and great professionals, that's not how people get great at something. They get great at something by spending time doing something very different from the activity, very different from playing basketball. When somebody is, playing a championship game, they're trying to do the best that they know how. If they are struggling with their three pointers, they are going to be passing the ball or trying to get closer to the net. They're going to be avoiding that move that they're having trouble with. But after the game, they're going to go to their coach and say, "Coach, I have to work on the 3-point shot," right? And that's a very different activity than what we do to perform. So what we're doing in the court is what I call the performance zone. And what we do when we're focused on improvement, using strategies for improvement, is what I call the learning zone. And we tend to get stuck in chronic performance in our work and life. And the book is about how to habituate the learning zone in our work and life so that we can continue to improve and increase our performance over time.
This is so amazing. I love your basketball analogies. I know you've got the King, LeBron James, and many of the great basketball players out there. Many of our listeners are great NBA fans as well. Share with us, please, as a follow-up, if you don't mind, why does this paradox, this performance paradox, ensnare so many of us, Eduardo?
Yeah, it's kind of in the water, in the air that we breathe, right? That the assumption that we just have to work really hard as best as we can, trying to minimize mistakes. A lot of us learn this in school because in school, most student work is graded with a letter or a number. And the
Sure.
implication is that we want students to be getting 100 on everything they do. That's the ideal, right? And if we're getting 100 on everything every day, it means we're just doing the things we already know how to do, right? If somebody's doing, we in school, we should be spending most of our time in the learning zone, which means we should be taking on challenges and doing things we can't do, making lots of mistakes, and then examining those mistakes to figure out what can I learn from this mistake that will help me become better. And so we learn this from school. We learn them from our systems in our society. For example, in Wall Street, the research analysts are very focused on valuing companies based on current earnings, right? Current
Sure.
quarter net income or next quarter net income. That puts pressure on executives to maximize immediate performance, to just try to minimize mistakes and do the best we know how already, rather than invest on increasing our competence and capabilities for the future. And so that pressure gets waterfalled down the organization, and then more broadly in society. And we also suffer from a cognitive bias called present bias, where we tend to overvalue the present and seek immediate rewards, immediate gratification. And the performance zone is the way to maximize our immediate performance. Like if we're trying to finish a project this week and we're struggling to get there, it's reasonable to say, I'm just going to focus on performing, doing the best I can, trying to get to the finish line this week. But then if we do that every week, then we stagnate, right? And that's what tends to happen.
Well, that's sad, no question about it. Now, thanks to you, there are ways we can overcome this performance paradox. How can we overcome this performance paradox and unlock true growth, Eduardo?
Well, there are many, many different learning zone strategies that are more applicable to different skills and different contexts, like how you get better at basketball or how do you get better at like a three-pointer is different than how you get better at communicating with your teammates, right? And how do you get better at being a parent and inspiring your kids or guiding your kids or coaching your kids? There are all different skills that involve different learning zone strategies. But what is common around the learning zone strategies is that they all involve leaping beyond the known, trying something that we haven't mastered yet, doing things differently. Often we get into the inertia of approaching each day like we approach the prior day. And if we don't change, there's no way to improve. In order to improve, we have to be changing. But in order to make all this easy, right, and not have it take a lot of willpower, we need to create habits and systems where change is the default. And so, for example, we can start by identifying what do I want to improve? And to before that, even we can ask ourselves, what do I care most about? What is most important to me? Because often we get lost in the minutiae of the mid-level goals or the low-level goals. And so we can ask ourselves, what is most important to me? And am I engaging in the learning zone regularly with regards to that? What could I do to get better at that? And then we can remind ourselves every morning of what our intention is. What do I want to improve and how do I want to go about it so that we can be more conscious of that and look for more opportunities to work on that as we go about our every day.
Wow. Oh, that is very, very nice. And certainly some great tips there. Now, if I perceive correctly, you don't believe there's one state of mind, but there's actually two states of mind crucial for improvement and performance. Have I perceived this correctly, Eduardo? And if so, what are those two states of mind, please?
Well, I think there are many different states of mind. The book, The Performance Paradox, focuses on two of them, like you're saying. One is the performance zone, which is when we're focused on doing things as best as we know how, trying to minimize mistakes. And the other one is the learning zone, when we're leaping beyond the known, taking risks, trying new approaches, experimenting, soliciting feedback, you know, looking at mistakes. But there are also other states of mind, like rest, for example. If you look at the most skilled people in the world, they rest more than other people. They sleep more than other people, because when we sleep, we are removing toxins from our brain, which makes it work better. We're resting when we're in the learning zone. That can take a lot of concentration. Like if you're doing deliberate practice on your 3-point shots, that takes a lot of effort, and you wouldn't do that for 10 hours. You might do that for a half hour, but the quality is really important. But then it tires us, so we need rest. We can engage in play, which is just really it fosters positive emotions, which is helpful both for learning and for performance. It can help us tinker with things that are distant from what we know. So like, you know, explore and go into things that we've never been exposed to before. And that can generate ideas for innovation and for new approaches to what we do. Connecting with other people, right? Just being present with somebody else can help us better understand the people around us. And that can help in learning and performing. So there's lots of different states of mind. But what I contrast, because we tend to get stuck in chronic performance, then what I focus on is helping people figure out, how can I engage in the learning zone on a regular basis?
The light bulb has just went on, because my golf game is horrific. And what I try to do naturally is to get out there and hit balls on the range or practice elsewhere and do this maybe sometimes for a couple hours. My problem is I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm just repeating the bad performance over and over again. So the light bulb just went on. It seems like, as you say, it's quality versus quantity. Have I picked this up right, Eduardo?
Absolutely. You know, if you look at like the most skilled, whether it is athletes or, you know, performers like violinists, you would think that they go to, you know, quote, the range 10 hours a day or 12 hours a day, and that's what makes them the best in the world. But that's not true. Depending on the domain, it's like the very, very top in the world engage in deliberate practice anywhere between 2 and 5 hours a day, which is a lot. You know, if you want to become the best golfer in the world, that's what it takes. It's a lot, but it's not 10 or 12 hours a day, and it's not all at once. So, it's absolutely more important to do quality rather than quantity. And so what does that mean? That means that you're going to be working on a very specific sub skill. Like you're going to be concentrated on a particular part of your swing in golf, and working on that very specific part and tinkering with it, right? And seeing if I try to like tense this muscle a little bit more, like what happens? And if I try to tense it a little bit less, what happens? If the ball goes too much to the left, then I'm going to try, what do I do to make it a little bit more to the right? And that involves a lot of concentration, repetition, feedback between each repetition. Ideally, you know, guidance from a coach or a teacher that can guide you along the way would be really helpful as well. And that's very different from just going there and hitting and hitting and hitting without really being concentrated on how what do I change between repetitions to get better.
Thank you so much. I think I'm going to cut some strokes off my game as a result of this conversation and have more fun at the same time. Now, it's funny because there are two terms that you introduce. I very much at the school that I'm at, St. Francis College, talk about learning by doing, but you also mention, if I perceive, learning while doing. Share what the difference of these two are, please.
Well, yeah, a lot of us talk about learning by doing to communicate the idea that as we get things done, we improve. And that can be a confusing term, because it can imply that to get better at golf, you just go and play lots of games of golf. You do golf and then you'll get better. And that can be confusing, right? Because that's not true. That works only when we're novices. If we've never played golf before, we go and play a game, we'll get better just because we're really bad, and we'll try and we'll notice where the ball goes and we'll try something else naturally and we'll get better just by playing. But once we become proficient, we will stagnate, and we might even be working really hard at doing and not getting better. And then we might develop the belief that we can't improve because we're working hard and we're not improving, when the reality is that we're not engaging the effective strategies to improve. And so I like, instead of the term learning by doing, I like to use the term learning while doing, to remind us that we can learn while we get things done, but it involves getting things done in a way that's different from just focusing on just getting things done, which is, if we're just focused on, here's my to-do list, I just need to get those done, and that's my only goal, then it's different than, okay, I need to get these things done that are in my to-do list, but I'm going to do them in a way that's going to also lead me to improve and do things with those two goals in mind. And that means we have to be tinkering and changing things, not just doing things always in the same way. We need to be paying attention to what is surprising us, so that we can learn from it. We can need to pay attention to mistakes and when things don't go great, and figure out what can I switch, what can I change in order to learn from this mistake. So listening feedback is super, super important and doesn't have to take a lot of time. So for most of us, the greatest opportunity is not in, you know, spending a half hour in the driving range. If in terms of in our work, most of the opportunity for most of us is in changing the way we get things done, so that we get things done in a way that's also going to lead to improvement.
Oh, this is so wonderful. Now, if it's okay with you, I'd like to peel the onion, Eduardo. You mentioned a term, mistake. Mistakes, clearly, other guests have shared this, and I think you referenced this in the book as well. They're good for learning. The challenge is they're bad for performance. How should people like me approach mistakes?
Yeah, that can create confusion within us, and also in our relationships, right? When we talk to our teammates about mistakes, like, you know, do we want to make mistakes, like, or do we want to perform, like, and that's just confusing. So I talk about four different kinds of mistakes it's helpful to differentiate. The first is a stretch mistake, which is when we're trying to do things beyond what we know. We're experimenting with new approaches, and we can't expect to do those things flawlessly because we're trying new things to see if they're going to work or not. So if you're going to the driving range and you're going to try like hitting a ball with a different club in a different way, you know, you can't expect that it's going to go exactly where you're going to go because you're just experimenting with a new technique. Yeah. And so those stretch mistakes are super helpful because they give us feedback for us to then learn from and adjust. And we want to be making lots of stretch mistakes, not by trying to do things incorrectly, but by trying to do things that are challenging. But we need to do those things when the mistakes are not going to create a lot of harm, right? When they're not going to have a lot of negative consequences, when it's safe to experiment. The second kind of mistake is the high stakes mistake, which is when we're in a high stakes situation. Like if we are, you know, in an NBA championship final, we don't want to be experimenting with a new way of throwing the ball to see if it's going to work or not, right? We want to try to throw the ball as best as we know how, trying to minimize mistakes. And that is when we want to be in the performance zone, is when the stakes are high. Third is the sloppy mistake, which is when we do something that we have already learned and we should know better, and that we all make mistakes in the performance zone, in the learning zone, because we're human. But whenever we make a mistake, first, like, some mistakes are just not that important. Some of them are funny and we can just laugh at them and they can bring joy to our lives. But we can always, you know, there's always an opportunity to think about it and think about, what can I learn from this mistake? And when we think about sloppy mistakes, often we find opportunities to increase our focus and change our systems and our tools and our habits in order to prevent those sloppy mistakes. And then the fourth kind of mistake is the aha moment mistake, which is when we do something as we intended, but then we realize it was the wrong thing to do. Like we might be interacting with somebody in a way that triggers them, and then they mention that, and then we understand why our behavior was problematic. Then that's an aha moment that is really precious. It's a precious learning opportunity. So when those aha moments come, we need to pay attention to them, figure out what we can learn from them, and they are really precious. And we can try to generate more aha moments by soliciting feedback regularly from different people so that they can share what's in their mind. But the key here is that the greatest opportunity for improvement is to try to generate more stretch mistakes. That's where we can be most proactive, by doing things challenging, trying new ways of doing things, and experimenting so that we can improve along the way.
Oh, that's really wonderful. No question about that. Now, it's interesting because I was in big pharma for 29 years before becoming a Franciscan brother. And one of the things we used to talk about regularly was unrepeated intelligent mistakes. It's okay to make some mistakes, but let's not repeat them, certainly. And we can, let's learn from them, as you've alluded so well to. It's very, very interesting because we're going to peel the onion on something we've talked a little bit about the last 20 minutes or so. And that's the most successful people and organizations in the world are known for constantly improving their crafts. Can you share with us maybe another learning strategy or two that we can use in our own work and our own lives that will help us with this constant improvement, Eduardo, please?
Absolutely. I think the for most of us, the most powerful strategy is soliciting feedback frequently, like a few times a week at least, from different people, right? Because most of us we want to have a positive effect on the people around us, whether it is the customers that we serve, or our colleagues, or our boss, or our loved ones. And when we uncover how we are affecting them, you know, what we're doing that is helpful and creating joy for them, what we're doing that is not, we generate ideas for first insights on what we're doing that's helpful so that we can continue doing those things or doing more of it. And then ideas for what we might want to change, what we might want to experiment with. So feedback is super, super powerful. Experimentation is super powerful. So trying new things. And sometimes we experiment in a way that becomes too performance oriented. So we might get an idea about doing something new that we haven't done before. We get really excited about it and we go execute it and scale it right away, rather than like test the hypothesis in a small way so that we can learn quickly and iterate quickly from those lessons before we go into execution and scaling, so that we can kind of be successful faster. We've talked about deliberate practice, which are the things that, you know, golfers or basketball players do. You know, there's reading, there's learning from experts, right? If you're interested in improving at a particular thing, like you want to become happier, for example, there's a lot of experts on happiness and what we can do to become happier, or to, you know, find mentors and to best engage with mentors, or anything else that we want to get better at. So whether it's listening to podcasts like this one, or reading, or watching videos online, or simply engaging with our peers. You know, there's fantastic peer learning groups that get together once a month, and people support each other and they talk about what they're working to improve, what strategies they're using. They tap, you know, each other's brains for ideas. And those are also, you know, powerful spaces. So those are just some of the examples that people turn learning into a habit and a system and a community. Because sometimes we engage in learning just by ourselves, but when we engage the people around us, both in learning and performing together in collaboration, we can be much more powerful, because, you know, more brains are smarter than one brain, and much more powerful than one brain.
This brings back such a happy memory of mine in big pharmaceuticals. Toward the end of my career, I was a facilitator of peer group learning sets of the leaders, top leaders in the organization. And it was amazing the sharing that would go on, and the win-win-win. They would win, the group would win, and the organization actually would win as well. Just wonderful, certainly. Sadly, time's getting short. We only got about 7 minutes, but Eduardo, I've got some key questions to ask you still. Right in the top of your wonderful book, right on the cover, a great quote from Carol Dweck, a best-selling author of Mindset. And this is someone I understand, Professor Carol, you met while attending the Stanford University. Be curious, how has her work influenced your life? How are you using this to influence others, please?
Sure. Yeah, it's been an honor to know Carol and have her as a mentor for the last 16 years. I I went to Stanford looking to change my career and to complete to start something in social entrepreneurship. And I was introduced to her because she was looking for somebody with a business background to help bring a growth mindset out into the world. And so we co-founded an organization called Mindset Works that helps schools foster learning cultures, growth mindset cultures. And her work has been life-changing for me, like it has for millions of people. She uncovered in her research in the 1980s and since this idea of growth mindset. And now it's been researched by like thousands of researchers. And it is the belief that people can change, that our abilities or qualities are malleable, that we can develop them over time, as opposed to a fixed mindset, which is when we think that the reason people succeed is because they either have or don't have something. Like if we think that intelligence is fixed in people, you either have a high level or a medium level or a low level, and that doesn't change, that would be a fixed mindset about intelligence. Or if you think that somebody's a great leader because they're a natural leader, that would be a fixed mindset about leadership, as opposed to anybody can become a better leader or everybody can become smarter. That would be a growth mindset about leadership or about intelligence. And this belief, affects us in a lot of deep psychological ways. When we're in a fixed mindset, we're focused on proving rather than improving. We focus on proving that our ability is high, that we are smart, that we are naturals. And so we do the things that we already know how to do rather than try new things. The things that we can do quickly and perfectly and without mistakes, that's what we do. When we make mistakes, we try to hide them to ourselves and to others. When we receive feedback, we tend to react defensively. And all of that prevents us from engaging in the learning zone. And so it keeps us at the current level of effectiveness and competence. And so uncovering how some of these beliefs, these fixed beliefs, are getting in the way of us engaging in the learning zone is part of the process of growth for us to realize how we are ourselves getting in our way of our goals.
Thank God for Carol Dweck, that's for sure. No doubt about that. It is, as we said before, we're right in the middle of National Hispanic Heritage Month. So I've got to ask you this in honor of this great month. Are there any ways your experience as a Hispanic person in the U.S. has influenced your career? And if so, what may these be, please, Eduardo?
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure there's many ways that it has influenced me. Some ways I'm conscious of, some ways I'm unconscious of. But I grew up in Venezuela, and I came to the U.S. when I was in high school, when I was 16 years old. My family moved to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it was a very positive experience. People were very kind to me, but they definitely saw me as a stranger, right? As a foreigner, as somebody different. And we all have, including me, everybody has unconscious biases about groups of people, right? And so I spoke with a very thick accent. I still have an accent. And sometimes, for example, we confuse unconsciously when somebody has an accent or doesn't speak a language as well. Sometimes we confuse that with kind of lower intelligence or lower skills.
Oh.
And so there's things that we don't realize, that somebody can be like an expert at something, which I wasn't. I was just a kid. But teachers, for example, sometimes might treat like a foreign student as if they are like incapable or unable to reach high levels of performance, because they might not be as well prepared to communicate in certain ways, for example. And so, you know, all of that, I'm sure has affected me in school and at work. And on the other hand, there are also spaces where my Hispanic heritage is celebrated and supported. Like, and so, for example, I am here speaking with you today in part because it is National Hispanic Heritage Month. And that's an opportunity that I have that I might not have if I wasn't Hispanic, right? I'm also male, and male, you know, unconsciously, people tend to, hopefully this is changing and will continue to change, but tend to kind of be more influenced by by male public speakers, for example. And so male public speakers, it may be easier for them to have a career, like, which is what I do, than female, right? And we have kind of assumptions about our roles and responsibilities at home that are different, you know, by gender historically. And so there's, you know, whatever our identity is and whatever, however we project ourselves, certainly affects us. And part of that is just stuff that I and all of us like are continuing to learn and become more aware of and work to create more equitable worlds.
Well, we certainly embrace Hispanic Heritage Month now and every month, certainly. So one of the things about Thank God for Monday is we love to have all different types of guests all throughout the year. But especially today, we're so glad you graced our airwaves. We've saved the best question for last. From where can our loyal listeners purchase The Performance Paradox? How can they best follow you, Eduardo, please?
Sure. The Performance Paradox is available wherever books are sold, Amazon or anywhere else. I'm excited. It was selected as a must read by the Next Big Idea Club, which is curated by Malcolm Gladwell, Susan Cain, Adam Grant, and Daniel Pink. And wow. I am active on LinkedIn, and my website is briseño.com. There's a PDF that people can download there with 5 strategies to foster a growth mindset. And I have a monthly newsletter there.
Oh, terrific. Let me, for the benefit of the listeners, spell your name, Eduardo, E-D-U-A-R-O, last name, B-R-I-C-E-N-O. Listeners, no excuse. Eduardo has invited you to follow him on LinkedIn there, take advantage of all the resources. And absolutely, you've got to get out there and buy this wonderful book. Buy a copy for yourself. This makes a great gift. I hate to say it, it's October already, certainly, late September, early October. The holidays are not that far away. This makes a fabulous gift. Give it early, certainly, so people can take full advantage of it still in 2023. Eduardo, thank you so much for being here with us today. We were enlightened. We've been inspired. Continued joy, success, and great contribution in all this fabulous work you're doing out there on the Best Coast.
Thank you for having me, Greg, and for all you do.
Pleasure was all ours. Listeners, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Eduardo does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.